Reading from Ruth chapter 4, which is on page 269 in the Church Bible. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here," and they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative, Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the guardian redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring of the Lord, though the offspring of the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz. Boaz, the father of Obed. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of David.
Good evening, all. For those who I haven't had the chance to chat to, my name's Ben. I'm married to Jo, and I have two young children who you might have seen at the front quite a lot on Sunday mornings. I'm here very humbly today to come to you and sort of guide our way through this chapter in Ruth. So I've called this sermon "A Remarkable End to a Remarkable Story," and in more ways than one, as we'll come to see, hopefully. Today we're going to see that after everything that Ruth has been through, from being on the edge of destitution, begging off the streets, she receives the happy ending that she could never have dreamt of. that Naomi could never have dreamt of. The ending that forms the foundations of many books and films, family, provision, security. And the story of a refugee finding not just a welcome, but a future amongst new people is as heartwarming and important as it has ever been. If we look, I think probably even now, the missiles are striking Ukraine and people are fleeing. This is a pertinent story which we should take to heart now. But we are also going to peel back this earthly story to reveal a heavenly story that I pray will help us all better appreciate and understand who Jesus is and what he did for us on the cross. This is not just a story of a lucky woman who landed on her feet in a strange land against the odds. No. In this story, we in fact have the image of Jesus, played out by Boaz, and a model for our relationship with him in what he did for Ruth. By looking at their story, I pray we will learn more about Jesus and the love he showed for us. I pray that their relationship will put our relationship with Jesus into better focus. I pray that through their relationship, our relationship with Jesus will be strengthened. So we'll approach this in three parts. We'll first look at the earthly story, taking a look at the events that happened in chapter 4 in a bit more detail. We'll then move on to the heavenly story, how the story reflects our own spiritual story, how it models Jesus' relationship with us. And then the final bit, the application, the so what. How does this affect me? How to use their relationship to help build our relationship with Jesus, which hopefully sounds good. So first bit, the earthly story. So chapter 4 is rich. It's also the finale, the finish of the last few chapters. So we'll just quickly recap on how we've gotten here. So chapter 1, scene 1. Ruth has joined a family who has already turned away from God in leaving Bethlehem in the Holy Land for Moab. The family, Naomi's family, comes across misfortune and she is left alone with a widowed mother-in-law. She sticks with her, Ruth, seemingly at the time a foolish move, but she has made a commitment to God. In chapter 1, verse 16, she calls your God, when speaking to Naomi, your God, my God, your God is my God. If this was a film, you could imagine the desolate music that would have been happening in the background at this point. In the audience watching this, you would have been convinced that there is no hope for this person. Was this a film? You might as well switch off now. No chance, no luck. Let me move on to scene 2. Ruth arrives back in Bethlehem with nothing. Beggars. Very much what we were expecting. Very much, if this was a film, what the music in the previous scene would have led us to believe. But here comes a glint of hope. Something to ensure we didn't turn off the film yet, didn't turn off that TV series. In God's providence, she is sent to beg from Boaz's field. Boaz is welcoming, generous, blesses her. We have heard how unlikely this would have been. Despite this being in God's land, this also occurred in the time of Judges, when obedience to God occurred in isolation, in brief periods. She could have turned up in any field and been it might not necessarily have gone the way it has done. But instead, she ends up in Boaz's field. And then the story gets better. It turns out that Boaz is their kinsman redeemer. In a Disney film, you could imagine him being portrayed as a strong, handsome figure, accompanied by a slight change in music, something more upbeat, a hint of things to come. But surely she is too desperate to have genuine hope. In scene 3, chapter 3, Ruth, under the wisdom of her mother-in-law, makes some advances on Boaz. She demonstrates obedience to her mother-in-law in doing so. Boaz seems interested. Maybe Ruth does have a future after all. But twist, there is a kinsman redeemer closer than Boaz. Nightmare, crushing. This is bad news for Ruth. She's been making her focus on Boaz, only to find out that there's someone else who could be holding her destiny in their hands. If this was a TV series, this would have been at the end of the penultimate episode, with cliffhanger music, with all to be revealed in the finale. And so we come to the finale, what we've all been waiting for, chapter 4. Boaz versus the other kinsman redeemer. You can imagine this being played out as a courtroom battle on screen. First he waits for this other man at the town gate, and upon seeing him, brings him over, along with 10 of the elders, Whatever is to be done is to be done officially. He then explains the situation to this other kinsman redeemer. Now, it's unclear if Boaz was particularly fond of Ruth or just wanted to see her looked after out of goodwill. We read in chapter 3, verse 13, when he replies to her saying, "Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem you, good. Let him redeem." But I think it's fair to say he clearly has a vested interest in Ruth, going out of his way to see her looked after, one way or the other, if it's him or if it's the other person. But that being said, I think you can see him build a dramatic argument to influence this other kinsman redeemer to see it go his way. I'm not so sure he is entirely neutral in how this will end. So when speaking to the kinsman redeemer about Ruth, he first highlights the land, the benefit, the good stuff. So in chapter 4, verse 3, he says, "Then he said to the guardian redeemer, 'Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech.'" So just the land. Naturally, the man says, "Yes, land. Going at a good rate, maybe? Who would say no?" But then Boaz reveals the catch. In the film, you can imagine the flourish, the twinkle in his eye when he nonchalantly puts it out there. "Oh, by the way," and then from chapter 5 we hear that Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also require Ruth, the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." I don't think this kinsman redeemer would have been expecting a widow, a woman, with the land that he was about to buy. And that clinches it. So because Elimelech's son has a widow, Ruth, buying the land of Elimelech would also mean marrying her. That was the law at the time. Without passing any comment on Ruth, acquiring a wife with a land sale might not have been what this kinsman redeemer was after. But the law went further. The law stated that he would then be expected to produce an heir for Elimelech. Their firstborn would take on Elimelech's name, not his, not this other kinsman redeemer's. So the land he was going to buy from Elimelech, from Naomi, were then passed back to his wife's relatives, not his. This land that he was going to have to look after, spend time and money on, is not going to ultimately benefit his own heirs. And if this turned out to be their only son, then all of his land, all of this other kinsman land, kinsman redeemer's land, both the land he bought and the land he had previously owned, would go into Elimelech's name. As we quote from chapter 4, verse 6, at this, the guardian, when Boaz explained that he was to acquire the dead man's widow, Ruth, at this, the guardian redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." This kinsman redeemer recognizes the cost that this land would bring, this extra cost that this land acquirement would bring. It all amounts to a hefty add-on to the price of the land when considering whether to buy it or not. This is a price too high for this kinsman redeemer, and he backs out. So Boaz, perhaps a little smugly, perhaps a little relieved, steps up and buys the land, despite this cost that the other kinsman redeemer recognizes. In verse 9 we read, "Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, 'Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses.'" And then he marries Ruth in the next bit. This is a real sacrifice that Boaz has made. He is spending money, and in the future, time, on land he won't keep, that will not stay in his family. And we've read in 3:10 earlier that he is likely an older man. So if we go back to 3:10, this is where Boaz is speaking. He says, "Lord, bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor," implying Boaz is slightly older. So Boaz is likely an older man. So if he is to have a son with Ruth, this may well be his only son. In which case, his name will cease altogether, and all his land will go into Elimelech's family. some cost indeed that this man is making. But then the story gets even better, the icing on the cake. Ruth marries Boaz, and then they have a son. God has blessed her with children, and so restores Elimelech's name and land. Not a bad happy ending. The Bible doesn't stop there. And then, nonchalantly, just added on at the end, there is the final line in there. Now, I don't think we all particularly like reading genealogies. I know I don't. But here we read that her son, that Ruth's son, is part of the line of a pretty big deal of David, who just happens also to be part of the line of Jesus. You could imagine a class of Bible scholars many years ago chatting to each other when they first came across Ruth about being set Ruth to read for homework, and half the class not having a clue about this final bit, having assumed that once they got to the boring genealogy, they were safe to hang out, they were safe to stop and go hang out with their mates instead. She did what? Ruth is now part of a blessing to humanity. Ruth has been used in God's eternal purpose for his salvation of the world. Not bad for a Moabite, an enemy of God's people. Ruth has been truly rewarded for her faithfulness. A remarkable ending to this remarkable story. Ruth had made herself vulnerable, asked for help, and has been rewarded. Boaz has, out of nowhere, stepped up at great personal cost, and through a legal form of payment and marriage, has delivered Ruth and Naomi from this destitution. But not just brought them back from the brink of the cliff, he's raised them up. Through his work, they have been blessed with children as part of David and Jesus' line. He has secured their futures. And in the film, the happy music of the film would fade into the background as they walked off into the sunset. So this is a happy ending story, but let's consider the heavenly element to it as well. We have to admit, off the face of it, when I first came across Ruth, it's a pretty random book in the Bible, if taken at face value. Even when considering the final couple of lines, when Ruth's significance in the line of David and then Jesus becomes apparent, this is still a little bit random. A whole book devoted to a fairly obscure person in Jesus' line. If we were to pick out a couple of other names from the genealogy of David, Ram doesn't get a whole book, nor does Nahshon. Boaz's mother was Rahab, who gets a decent showing, but not a whole book. But the Bible isn't random. As we know, by lots of verses out there, 1-2 Timothy, all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. And I think this story mirrors ours. Ruth's story with Boaz mirrors our story with Jesus. As with so many things in the Old Testament, this story models something else. It models our relationship with Jesus. And let's see how. So firstly, like Ruth, we were outsiders to God. Ruth, as a Moabite, an outsider of God's people, would have been lost to God. Didn't know him or trust him, may never have even been taught about him. Or, if she had been, probably would have been painted a very negative picture of Israel's God. And through a series of events, she had no earthly future either. Similarly, at one point, we would have been like this too. Unlike Ruth, we might have had an earthly future. But crucially, without a relationship with God, we were like Ruth in having no eternal future. That's where we all started. But one way or another, like Ruth, you were introduced to God. A family member, a friend, your mother-in-law, as with Ruth, although I can't imagine that's that common. You heard a bit about him, and then some more, and then you came to be recognized as one of God's people. You claim that, like Ruth, your God is my God. You committed to God. And this may have come at cost, as it did with Ruth, who left her own people, her own land, to remain with her widowed mother-in-law in commitment to her newfound God. For you, it might have had a different cost. Relationships with family or friends might have taken a hit. Discrimination might have occurred in the different parts of your life. And that's for us. In some parts of the world, the cost of following Jesus is so much worse. The story of Ruth then turns to how she was saved in an earthly sense, before she was blessed in a heavenly sense through her offspring. And although this may be an earthly story, an earthly salvation, it mirrors how Jesus saves us in the heavenly sense. Firstly, Boaz underwent great personal cost to save Ruth. He paid money to acquire Ruth's land that would ultimately revert to Elimelech's family, not his. And whilst there would have been an initial cost, we can assume there would have been future costs too. Time, money, to manage it well. And he actually risks all of his own estate being lost, as the other potential kinsman redeemer well noted. And note how this was done in a legalistic way, in front of elders as reliable witnesses, using the sandal to confirm his transaction. Undertaking a great personal cost to save an outsider. Does this sound familiar? This mirrors Jesus, who underwent great personal cost to make a legal payment to save us. God was owed a debt for the sin of humanity, the debt that we all contribute to. Jesus paid that debt on the cross. And his cost was so much more than money, time, land. He was forsaken by God on the cross, by his Father, after an eternity of being in a perfect, loving relationship with him. It just doesn't compare. Secondly, Boaz doesn't just pay the necessary debt. He does much more than this. He marries Ruth, entering into a loving, caring relationship with her, in which his role is to lead her in God's way. He doesn't just take her away from the brink of destitution. He raises her up as well, in a glorious manner. I think it's safe to assume that he does this well. He does this in a really godly way, as God then blesses them with a child. Not just any child, a child. You know, all children are amazing to their parents. But this child wasn't any old blessing. This child was in the line of David, of Jesus. She has been blessed with a great king of Israel, and then the great king of mankind in her line. A blessing that will last an eternity. Again, entering a loving relationship in which the main person, the purpose is to love, support, and lead in God's way, to raise to God for eternal blessing. This points to Jesus, who, as we read in Ephesians, loved his church like a bride and gave himself up to her to make her holy. We, God's people, enter God's presence not just clean, but radiant, as God's children, all through the saving work of Jesus, through that marriage. And the final point on this bit, Boaz did this. He went out of his way to do this, to save Ruth, despite the fact that Ruth was a complete outsider. Probably worse, the Moabites would have been enemies of God's people. She was a poor, hopeless outsider. She wasn't part of God's people. She didn't have any money, land, anything to recommend herself to anyone, let alone a stand-up holy citizen, in a judge's world where obedience to God was a rarity. She would have been a highly unlikely choice for this holy man, Boaz. Much more going against her than for her. And yet, he delivers her. Boaz delivers her. Saving people who owe him nothing, worse, who anger him, are enemies of him, go against him time after time. Despite the fact that we come to him, Jesus, as outsiders, as sinners, with absolutely nothing to recommend us to him, Jesus accepts us, loves us so much, all we have to do is profess faith in him and we will be saved. There was a Roman passage this morning's service that sums this up well. Romans 10, verse 9. If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. You don't have to trust in Boaz to jump through several hoops. You don't need to be lucky to find a Boaz in the first place. You just have to believe in Jesus. Like Ruth, we were once outsiders, worse, enemies to God, with nothing to recommend us to him. Like Ruth, we were saved through a legal payment. And better, we were raised up to be blessed by God in marriage, in a marriage with Jesus. So maybe this story of Ruth wasn't so random after all. Maybe this sermon is better described as a remarkable end to all our remarkable stories, not just to hers. So I have three applications as the last bit of the sermon on why the story of Ruth and Boaz is so helpful for us today, thousands of years later. And they all come from using the story to help us make the sacrifice of Jesus for us, which I find can be something quite difficult to grasp. It can be quite conceptual. Try and make that more tangible, more relatable, more real. They all come from using an earthly relationship, something we are in the form of Ruth and Boaz, something we understand, we can relate to, we have experience in, to help us in our heavenly relationship, something that can be a little harder to understand. And in making our relationship with Jesus more real, I pray will really help us in our own faith. So the first one of these three applications is thankfulness. We look at Boaz, see all that he has done for this undeserving woman, and think, what a good bloke. The Ruth film that I vaguely painted would certainly paint him in a pretty decent light. We gravitate towards him and consider him generous, loving, self-sacrificing. He does all these really positive things to Ruth. We would treat him with respect if we were to meet him. We can absolutely see that Ruth has a lot to be thankful for. How much more so with Jesus? He isn't just a good bloke. He is perfect, utterly perfect, the most loving, kind, self-sacrificing person we could know. What an honour that is. And this honour is compounded by the fact we have done nothing to deserve that love, to deserve Jesus' sacrifice. Worse, we have done an awful lot that so that he should be ashamed of us, disgusted with us. We come to him as complete strangers, dirt pouring off us and with nothing to offer. And yet he says yes. He takes you and raises us up as family to present to his father as an heir, a child blameless and pure. We have much more to thank Jesus for than Ruth did for Boaz. So let's apply the thankfulness we would expect Ruth to have to Boaz, add a whole lot more to it, and give it joyfully to Jesus. Let it refresh our thankfulness to Jesus when we look at Ruth and Boaz. The second application is a real awareness of my sin, the sorry bit, how sorry I should be. In Ruth, seeing how much Boaz has done for her, you would think, from personal experience, you know that she would respond to his love in a positive, loving way. Never mind the rules that Boaz might have set or his specific earthly demands of her, if indeed there were any. We would have expected her natural response to the love that Boaz has demonstrated for her would be to love him deeply right back. And such a love would include finding out and caring about what he cares for without having to be asked, and to do so naturally and joyfully. I can see this in myself too. When someone does something really nice for me, I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm joyful. I respect them. And at times, such is the depth of my respect, I may even start trying to act like them, be particularly considerate of their views. But again, let's remind ourselves of how much more Jesus did for us in dying on the cross to secure our eternal futures, not just the earthly future. But do I maintain a thankful, joyful attitude, as you think I might do? Do I continually seek to align myself with his ways, be more like him? I fear not, certainly not all the time. And how rubbish is that? I look at Ruth and think, she must have really responded to Boaz in love. And yet, I can't even do it for Jesus. I have a lot to be sorry about. And I know Jesus will forgive me every time. But again, we look at Ruth and Boaz, that they remind us of how much we have to be, how we have to be sorry for. The third point is that of assurance. Like all models, is good, is not perfect. Boaz models Jesus, but imperfectly. He isn't Jesus, for lots of reasons, not least in the way that Boaz did not have complete control over Ruth's future. Ruth, throughout the book, is constantly on the cusp of not having her future secured. What if Ruth didn't go to his field, didn't follow the advice of Naomi, didn't find him on the threshing floor? What if Boaz didn't act as he did, was in a bad mood on the day Ruth appeared, or was kept away on business and never came across her at all? There is so much at risk. Now, there is the argument of God's providence. All of this was in God's control. He had Ruth's future secured before she was even born. But for her, these would have been uncertain, unsettling times. From Ruth's perspective, nothing about her future was a certainty. Not so with us. With Jesus, the perfect Redeemer. When we trust in Jesus, we can be confident of his saving, of our futures, of our eternal futures, with no dependencies, no ifs, no buts. Think of that Romans passage again. There are loads of others like it. So as good as Boaz was for Ruth, how much better is it for us in Jesus as Savior? To end, the final chapter of Ruth is the finale of a stereotypical love story Hollywood would love. Foreigner with no hope meets loving, caring man who plucks her from her sorry state and secures her future. Securing her future forever. As they walk off into the sunset, we really admire Boaz for all the things he has done. Blessing not just Ruth, but ultimately giving the world an offspring that led to the saviour of all humanity. But as the credits of the story begin to start, let us consider how Boaz's earthly relationship with Ruth is like Jesus's heavenly relationship with us. But how much more, how much better is Jesus's relationship with us? He takes us so much worse than Ruth was to Boaz and raises us infinitely higher. Let that refresh our thankfulness. Let that remind us of our sin and our pursuit to be holy. And most of all, let us be reminded of how our salvation through Jesus is completely, utterly assured. A remarkable end to the story indeed.